Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for ageing and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track.
Welcome everyone. In today's episode, I'm chatting with two people who are recipients of home care packages. These two women are also advocates and actively involved with organisations to elevate the voices of older people. Being recipients of packages and understanding the concerns of other consumers through their roles as advocates places today's guests at the forefront of lived experience. Today, we're going to discuss how support at home might impact them and other participants joining this program in November. Daniela Hliss is a past carer, bilingual social support worker, and cultural diversional therapist. She is a member of multiple multicultural organisations that assist older Australians with culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds. She is currently a member of a national advocacy group and has previously been a member of the Council of Elders. Daniela has a Level 2 home care package and she is an aged pensioner. Hannah Law is also an aged pensioner who receives a home care package. She also assists her husband to manage his home care package, as well as assisting a friend who has dementia to manage her home care package. Hannah has also cared for her elderly mother who was vision impaired and developed dementia, ending up in residential care. Daniela, are you in the grandfathered group as we move towards support at home?
Yes, I was first offered support at home some years ago after my breast cancer surgery. And because I live alone and I had no one to help me. Then a number of serious health conditions, including progressive vision loss, followed. And so I'm extremely grateful that I am a recipient of home care level 2 package. But I am also looking after a relative as he's my aged care representative, and he was for a long time on level 4 care package. So I do understand a fair bit about this.
Wonderful. And Hannah, are you, your husband and your friend within the grandfathered group as well?
Yes, we are, thankfully.
Excellent. That provides you with quite a lot of reassurance moving forward, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Although there has been some confusion. People are worried that down the track in a year or two, that may change. We don't have any reassurance that we will continue to be grandfathered.
Yes, I know at this current time, we are running with that you will be grandfathered indefinitely. But, you know, we can't say that with absolute certainty, can we? Because things might change in another year or two. Daniela, do you feel that the CALD community, the culturally and linguistically diverse communities, understand how Australia's aged care system works?
So let me say I have been an advocate and peer advocate and carer and support worker for over 20 years now. So I have seen some great improvements in this sector, and I do feel we are moving forward, although what happens, it's what I call, we are given breadcrumbs, and it's not much. It's not just CALD communities that are still misinformed or in the dark about a lot of things. It's the general population. I live in a retirement village. We are about 450 people here, most of them Australian born. Not very aware of my aged care, didn't participate in consultations, don't believe that their voice matters. So we need to do much more. And I think for the CALD communities, the government really needs to work harder with multicultural organizations and get them on board for raising awareness on a large scale, especially in regional and remote. And for others, the governments needs, and COTA and Seniors Australia and so on, they need to come to hundreds and hundreds of retirement villages with great populations and start educating us, because it's, what we don't know scares us. So, we will calm down.
What you've just said is something that we're aware of as well. And what we often find is that people remain unaware until they need services.
Yes.
And it's not until that point that they become aware there is support available from the government, but they think that when they need that support is going to be available straight away.
Yes.
But we know it takes a long time to get that kind of support. So I think education really, you know, it needs to focus on perhaps younger people as well, adult children, and education a lot more broadly, to let people know that there is this support and not to wait until they absolutely need it. Daniela, what support is available for people who are culturally and linguistically diverse to get in-home aged care assistance?
So on paper, Australian-born, cult people, First Nations people, we are all given the same support. We are all given the same assessments and everything else. But because we have this huge lack of bicultural, bilingual workforce, because we have too many recommendations and not enough legislation, the service providers, both for home care and residential care, get away with a lot. If they only have a few people from cult background, even if these people have dementia and have reverted to mother tongue, the service providers don't engage in free training for cultural appropriate care. They don't provide appropriate meals. They don't use apps and tools, which we've spent years and years of, you know, preparing them. And we have a wonderful amount of all these training materials and apps and tools, but there is no legislation for people to use them.
Mm.
So the biggest problem is, yes, there is a lot available. No, it doesn't influence the accreditation or star rating or anything else. So in many cases, it's not applied. I find it incredible, for example, that we have a national legislation about seatbelts, and we all know what clear consequences are if I don't wear my seatbelt in a car. And yet, on the other hand, health professionals are not legally obliged to engage an interpreter, and so they can misdiagnose a person. Provider can disregard standards and person-centered approach and disregard my culture and identity. A person can die in residential aged home because of negligence and the non-use of interpreters or even just communication cards. And yet, there is no serious consequences.
That's very concerning. That's a huge issue, isn't it?
Yes. And this is the things that not only make me angry, but make me cry, because I see it too often in the last 20 years.
Yeah. Daniela, in regional areas, what do you see that might be different from someone who lives in, say, Sydney or Melbourne with regards to the cult communities?
Yes, I was just preparing an article the other day, and I said there is so much discrimination in aged care that it's not necessary. If you are 65, depending where you live, where you're from, original city, do you speak good English or not? All this will determine the care you will get, even though somebody in Sydney or somebody in Little Budrim, where I live, with exactly the same conditions and diagnosis and disabilities, we should really both get the same care, right?
Mm, yes.
But the disturbing thing again is that in remote and regional, we don't have enough doctors. We certainly don't have enough staff in aged dementia care. We lack bicultural, bilingual workers. The volunteer scheme, I've looked for volunteers, bilingual volunteers on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and I had hard times finding them. So there is a lady I met the other day in a nursing home. She's Japanese. She says every year, she's been in the residential care facility for 3 years now. Every year she looks forward to 1 week when her daughter comes from overseas and offers her Japanese meals for a week. I mean, how cruel is that? And yet with all the standards and everything we have, it should be possible for the provider to at least once a month get a Japanese meal delivered, if nothing else. So the regional areas suffer much more. Even training in palliative care, for example, I was visiting an Italian gentleman and the service provider did very well and was playing Italian music for him in the background. But then I noticed his hearing aid on the bedside table. And I said to the staff, why? And she said, oh, he's dying. He doesn't hear anything. And things like that really make me cry. I was sent to see an Italian gentleman, and his family was told that he stopped talking with them, daughters and wife, because of his advanced dementia. And yet, after being with him for 45 minutes, we were singing O Sole Mio together. So it wasn't dementia. It was just that he reverted to Italian and his Australian wife and children didn't understand him. So he stopped talking. These are the things that can be so easily fixed.
That makes me very sad as well about that Japanese lady and the gentleman with his hearing aids that was at the end of his life. You fulfill a remarkable role, Daniela, and I can tell such a passionate advocate, but it's not enough, is it?
As I said before, things have improved from 20 years ago, and it's good and it's positive, but we can do so much better.
Do you see families extending their role as carers in the culturally and linguistically diverse communities and not seeking support via our aged care system?
Well, I looked after my father who lived with disability and after my mom who had dementia for many years. And I can see then we didn't have home care package. We do have now, so things have changed a little bit. But many of us born overseas are educated, are brought up with the belief that it is our duty of care as daughters and sons to look after our families. Plus, in many of the countries of our birth, aged care as such and residential care facilities don't exist. So there is a lot we can be grateful for in Australia, and we must never forget that. However, the carers today, with the financial situation that we have, more and more women that in the past didn't go to work, even of other cultures, are now having to find work. And this breaks their hearts because even if you take a loved one to a day respite center, for example, very seldom in regional and remote areas will there be a bilingual worker. So what does the family carer do? They stay with the loved one in the day respite center because otherwise it would be too cruel all day without communication. And I just think that with the use of appropriate training, communication cards, assisting people to watch or listen to their own radio and SBS television programs, remaining in contact with bicultural clubs, which we have many, encouraging people of migrant descent to be bilingual and, you know, not just eat their culture-appropriate food at home, but learn the culture and language of their parents, really embrace the multicultural society that we are, then the cult people, especially in residential care facilities and respite, would suffer less.
Mm.
But the carers need better support. We are neglected. We are used by the government, by the system. We save billions of dollars every year to the aged care budget. We have no support and nothing much happened in the new system that is coming into place in November for family cares.
Mm. Before we cross over to Hannah Daniela, and you've raised some really important points and shared some beautiful stories. Thank you for that. I just wanted to ask you, what is your understanding of the co-contributions for your particular situation?
Well, I'm confused like many others. I mean, I'm happy to admit that I'm confused because the percentage, they say, will vary based on whether the individual is a pensioner, has a Commonwealth seniors card, both of which I am. And yet it's already been indicated that I will have to pay co-contributions. If that's the case, I will cease receiving home care because I can't afford it. I pay something like $560 per month in my retirement. I am not entitled for rental assistance because of some stupidity of contract. So at the end of the day, I will probably be forced out of my home prematurely, like thousands of others. And it's just that I believe that so many of us, instead of staying longer at home with the reforms, with these co-contributions where we will have to pay to stay at home, will end up in nursing homes. And this is going to be a huge cost to the aged care budget, and the whole thing will backfire. There is no innovation and certainly no good care in it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, look, we are hearing a lot of concern from people as well with the co-contributions. And what we're hearing is the same as what you have just said, is that people are going to relinquish their packages because they actually can't afford them, which is super concerning.
Community pharmacies keep Australia healthy. With 6,000 locations nationwide, they're open early, late, and longer for convenient, accessible, and safe care. Pharmacists provide home medicine reviews, dose administration aids, and essential vaccinations. Thanks to additional training, many can now treat common conditions like ear infections, wounds, and skin issues. They also support management of chronic conditions in partnership with your healthcare team. Ask your pharmacist how they can help you and your family stay well.
Hannah, let's chat with you now. You've also noted the co-contributions as a concern. What is it about the co-payments or the co-contributions that concerns you?
I'm really concerned about the cost pressures older people are facing right now. I've been hearing heartbreaking stories, people telling me that they're going to have to choose between having a shower, cleaning their home, or buying food. And these are not luxuries, they are basic needs. And what makes it even more stressful is the scale of the cost. Providers are quoting charges of $100 for services like cleaning, gardening, or shopping support. And under the new system, domestic assistance falls into the 17.5% co-payment bracket, which means out-of-pocket costs could be $17.50 for every hour just for a basic clean. And that's going to add up very quickly. If someone needs 2 hours of domestic help a week, that's nearly $150 a month. That's a hefty sum out of a pension. Basic aged care pension is $574 a week, and many people may be paying rent or a mortgage or have no savings, and they simply can't afford co-payments. Moreover, household budgets are already tight. Pensioners are juggling rent, groceries, rising energy and medication costs. And when you have to decide between personal care and food, something's gone terribly wrong. This act is discriminatory and ageist. The NDIS is not means tested, nor do recipients have to make co-payments. And furthermore, the Royal Commission into Aged Care did not recommend co-payments. It's very clear in their document. So how that translated to the task force, we don't quite understand. We know that hardship provisions exist, but the process is so invasive and drawn out that many simply give up. And I believe co-payments in their current form risk turning essential support into an unaffordable luxury. And people are saying they will opt out.
Hannah, you talk to many recipients of packages in your role as an advocate. Would you say that the co-payments or co-contributions are the most concerning aspect of support at home for people?
Yes, I think it's one of the most. The other concern is the $15,000 cap on home maintenance and assistive technology. The co-payments are constantly raised. People are saying they won't be able to afford support services if they have to make co-payments. It'll become a choice between having a shower. 5% co-payment mightn't sound like a lot, but with providers charging $120 an hour, which is a sum I've seen mentioned, if a person wants to shower three or four times a week, that's $24 a week or $100 a month, and that's just showering.
Mm.
And, you know, add to cleaning and other services. And again, people are so concerned, they're saying, I can't afford it, I'm going to have to opt out.
Yes.
And that will lead to people going into care, as Daniela said. People will end up in an aged care facility well before they should. It's going to cause a tsunami.
Yeah, I think the risk is people will end up in hospital as well. If they're choosing to reduce the amount of food that they're eating, you know, that can lead to malnutrition, which leads to implications of other health conditions and not showering as well. It's certainly, and I guess that's, we see a lot of this conversation out there, particularly with personal care and meals and social support as well, as being essential basic services that should be exempt from these co-contributions.
Yes, things like skin integrity are going to be vitally important. In South Australia, we have a terrible ambulance ramping problem. And this morning on the radio, they were mentioning corridor ramping. They now have to take light bulbs out of ceilings so that patients who are left in corridors for day after day can have a bit of darkness. And there are hundreds of people who are waiting for an aged care bed who can't get it. There's this bed block. And that problem is going to be exacerbated when people stop having support at home.
Hannah, you've also highlighted confusion about the support at home rules as a concern. Are you confused? Are many people confused?
Yes, there's immense confusion. I've studied the documents that my provider had sent out to me, and it's still confusing. It's the latest booklet is about 36 pages long. Some of it seems contradictory. There's a lack of clarity and there are so many exclusions and everything has to be justified on an age-related basis. I've just been refused something because my provider has deemed that my condition is not age-related. I'll find it that many people are not able to advocate for themselves. And we seem to be in this hole where if you have a disability, you have nowhere to go. It must be age-related, and we're seeing that more and more. So there's confusion about what we can have and what we can't have. And as I said, many people are unable to advocate for themselves.
Are you comfortable in just providing a bit more explanation around why your provider denied a request for something because they deemed it wasn't age-related?
Yes, I have severe peripheral neuropathy. And when my feet get cold, the pain is excruciating. So if I can keep my feet as warm as possible, I'm a lot happier person because they don't hurt as much. I purchased a very expensive pair of boots with a central zipper that makes them very easy to get on and off. And my doctor wrote a letter of support, but he did not state, and that was my fault because I forgot to ask him to state, that it's age-related. So I received a very prompt response from my care partner who said, because it's not age-related, they're denying my request for reimbursement. And that cost me $150, so it's no small amount for a pensioner.
Can I ask you, I think you certainly did the right thing in going to the GP, but I don't, you know, from where I sit as a registered nurse and working in this space, I would take that up again. And yeah, I think there's still scope there to have an ongoing discussion with your provider. And, you know, what I always say to people is present the evidence, you know, give as much detail as possible. So, you know, I certainly can't comment on behalf of your provider, but I feel that if you can provide more context to that, that, you know, hopefully they will approve that request for you. But yeah, it's really important. I speak all the time about the, you know, people having an awareness and a really good understanding of their health conditions and what that means for if they can't do things or they're limited in their activities of daily living, and about providing as much detail and evidence as possible so that they can make it easy for their providers to say yes to requests.
Well, I actually wrote a clinical justification for my case. And again, I'm able to fight this. I'll revisit it. Yeah. But there are so many people who have no idea to even where to begin. And that all adds to this confusion.
Yes, correct. Hannah, has your provider explained what support at home will look like for you?
Yes, I'm going to be grandfathered, for which I'm grateful, as will my husband and my friend who has dementia. They've provided us with a booklet. Now, the friend who has dementia, she has a husband who is her carer 24/7. He gets 3 hours a week of a break. Now, that's because I'm their support person. My provider has emailed their booklet to me. Now, they're not computer literate, so I'm going to have to contact them and ask them to send a hard copy. And I can see my friend's face now when it arrives in the mail, that he will throw it up in the air and he'll say to me, Hannah, what does this mean? Because he'll have no idea. So this booklet, 36 pages long, raises more concerns. And while it clarifies some things, it is confusing in many aspects. And it's going to take me several hours to go through it. The lifetime cap of $15,000 for assistive technology and home modifications, as I mentioned before, is a huge concern. If somebody needs an electric wheelchair, a widening of a couple of doorways, that would eat up that sum in a heartbeat. I've paid out in the last 2 years to my occupational therapist, who is very good at her job, $2,500. My husband, the same. Now, that's going to eat into that $15,000 cap very quickly. And again, things are not, we're not getting all the information. That's another thing. The rules under this Act are still being investigated and consulted upon. I've just written a submission about the pricing to the Health Commission, and they're filling out things in dribs and drabs, so we don't have all the information.
I agree with you. I think the whole sector probably feels the same. We're just still waiting on a lot more detail. Where else are you seeking clarification about support at home?
I contacted my provider by phone a few times, but unfortunately my care partner seems as confused as I am because, again, as you said, they're waiting for information themselves. I've also asked questions of the previous aged care minister, Annika Wells, because there was confusion about whether people who are grandfathered would continue to be grandfathered after a couple of years, and she did answer me saying that she believed that we would be grandfathered continuously. This morning I phoned ABC Radio Adelaide to speak to Mark Butler because they were interviewing him about the Aged Care Act. And once again, he seemed confused and unable to clarify the points I raised. He doesn't know his own act.
Did you actually get to speak with Mark Butler on the radio?
I got to say my piece. The host was very generous and gave me a good hearing about co-payments and the $15,000 cap. And then Mark Butler was given the opportunity to answer. You'll be able to find that on the ABC Listen page on the internet because they put it up once they finished the program and it aired at around about 8:45 South Australian time, so you'll be able to queue it up.
Fantastic.
I have done it. Last year, ABC Adelaide Radio were calling me their aged care correspondent.
Oh, goodness.
I rang. They know my number. And Mark Butler last year, David Bevan, the host, was saying, "So, Minister, Hannah's right. So, Minister, Hannah knows the act better than you do, and it's your act."
Well done, Hannah Law. That is fantastic. Please don't stop calling the radio up and having a chat with our minister. We all thank you. So, Hannah, do you think that the peak advocacy bodies are listening to the concerns of consumers? And how could your voices be amplified?
I'm really concerned that they're not really taking our voices into account. I think they're saying that they're listening, but I'm not convinced that they're able or willing to relay to the minister or the task force that people are really hurting and unable to afford co-payments. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to advocate for us, but are they truly doing that? I'm not. They might be talking the talk, but are they walking the walk? And our voices could be amplified if the advocacy groups I belong to were given a round table with Ministers Butler and Ray and members of the task force.
Well, I hope that happens as well. Daniela, what are your thoughts on the extent recipients of in-home aged care are being consulted about the coming reforms, namely support at home?
Well, if I am correct, about 10,000 individuals were involved in consultations with over 320 submissions that were made and some 850 surveys in the past couple of years. Now, apparently some 200 to 300 people from CALT background took part through roundtable discussions that took place with multicultural organizations. And as for the exact number of First Nations people involved, I didn't get any statistics. I was unable to get them. So we have about 4.2 million seniors, 65 plus. Has it been enough? I don't think so. However, it's not so much the consultations that I am concerned about. It's the fact that I believe, for example, I was 2 years on the Council of Elders and we had healthy consultations, heaps of them. But when I ask, when are we going to sit down and start co-designing new policies and new aged care act and so forth, I was kindly informed that co-design does not happen in the government. So unless we have the government sitting down with the Department of Health and Social Justice, service providers, ethnic organizations, seniors, elders with lived experience, we are the ones who know our needs, including workforce representatives and family carers. All of us together are the ones that would be co-designing what Australia needs in aged care, dementia care, and disability care. The consultations may have been, we may have been heard, but our needs were not translated by policymakers. And I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody, but a carpenter learns to be a carpenter and then practice being a carpenter. Politicians that become aged care experts cannot possibly help us with dignity. Sorry.
I don't think you should apologise, Daniela. You've raised some really relevant points, actually, about co-design. So thank you for that. Daniela, just before we wrap up today, what are your final thoughts?
I know that every change is cultural fact, especially for us older, and more so when we don't understand everything about that change. But it's here and I will embrace it. I will need to learn to accept certain changes and I will fight for everything that I can accept because I am living the last few years of my life and I have a human right to live and die as dignified, respected and valued Australian together with all my other seniors and I will fight for that.
Thank you, Daniela. Hannah, what are your final thoughts before we wrap up today?
I'm really concerned that support at home is not going to be ready to be rolled out on the 1st of November. I would strongly recommend to the government that co-payments need to be scrapped, at least for full pensioners. And the cap on assistive technology and home modification needs to be revisited. People are hinting now, and they'll be even worse off under support at home as it stands. It's about human rights.
Thank you, Hannah. We're about to wrap up the show for today. It's actually been a privilege speaking with you both and hearing your own stories and your own concerns and the stories and concerns of so many other people that you're representing today as advocates. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you both for the work that you do to advocate for older people and thank you for your time today.
Hey Care Community, thanks for listening to this episode. So you never miss a show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like to know more about what we do, head to our website, cmeacn.com.au.